Hello, and welcome to the IDEA State Complaint Resource Center podcast series. Today is May 6, 2015, and this is Candace Cordiella, Director at the Advocacy Institute. The IDEA State Complaint Resource Center is a project of the Advocacy Institute. It is designed to provide information and resources to assist parents and advocates in navigating the complaint process with a particular focus on systemic noncompliance issues. We're talking today with Nathan Kirstein, staff attorney at the Disability Rights of Iowa. Nathan's agency filed complaints in 2013 and 2014 regarding two facilities in that state that serve troubled youth. Subsequent investigations by the Iowa Department of Education found multiple violations of IDEA as alleged in the complaints. We're pleased to have Nathan joining us today to discuss these complaints. Nathan, thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you very much for having me.
So let's begin by having you give our listeners a very quick overview of your agency and its mission.
Okay. Disability Rights Iowa is a part of the protection and advocacy system across the United States. There's one of our agency in each state and U.S. territory. Our mission is to protect and advocate for the rights of individuals with disabilities and mental illness. So we do that on a large scale, doing systemic work as well as individual advocacy work. The federal laws that have set us up to be in place allow broad access authority into facilities that house persons with physical disability, intellectual disability, or mental illness. And so that allows us access into many different facilities and access to records and access to interview with individuals. And so we're able to do some larger systemic work because of that.
Good. Okay. And so there is a protection and advocacy organization in every state, and the contact information for each state can be found at the website for the National Disability Rights Network, which is at www.ndrn.org. That's the umbrella group that all of the individual state agencies belong to. So you can go there and find your state's agency. So can you tell us what led to your agency's involvement in the Iowa facilities that were the subject of your two complaints?
Yeah. As I mentioned before, we have broad access authority into different facilities, and myself and my coworker work on the children's team, and so we're dedicated to issues that affect youth. And our executive director made a decision that she wanted us to start focusing on the two state-run facilities in our state that are kind of the deep-end facilities for juvenile delinquents. So that would be the Boys State Training School and then the Girls State Training School. And we ended up finding out so many issues at the Girls State Training School that we couldn't even focus on the Boys State Training School during that time. We are now, but during that time, we had to let that go to the back burner. And that's how we got involved. Really, it was by fluke. There was no newspaper report or no one called us and said, hey, these abuses are happening here. It was more we just kind of wanted to focus on a few facilities, and then we just, by nature of it all, ran into some issues there.
Right. So does your agency have any data on the number of students with disabilities, and I'm referring now to students who are IDEA eligible, who are placed in these types of facilities within your state?
Well, what we do have is, you know, from our monitoring and investigation at the Girls State Training School, which was also called the Iowa Juvenile Home as well. It housed several different types of youth there.
Right.
There was about 68% of them were on IEPs. The next facility that we visited, Clarinda Academy, both of those, that was around the same percentage. And what we're hearing, I have not confirmed this, but what we're hearing is over 50% of our youth involved in our child welfare system and our juvenile justice system have IEPs.
Yes, and I think that's probably a very easy estimate to believe, which I think gives us all the more reason for somebody to be doing this kind of work in every state, quite honestly.
Mm-hmm.
So let's focus first on the 2013 complaint against the Iowa Juvenile Home, which, as you just mentioned, was the girls' facility.
Mm-hmm.
By identifying a few students who were not being served properly, your complaint then, in fact, alleged that these were widespread and systemic issues that pretty much apply to all kids with IEPs in the facility, and therefore you made some sweeping requests for remedies to address the issues that you had uncovered. Was there any issue of your standing in regard to the complaint?
Yes, there was. The Attorney General's office, who was representing Department of Human Services, who ran the facility for our state, had filed several different motions to dismiss the complaint for lack of standing. The interesting thing, though, is that in the Individuals with Disabilities Education Act, so in the IDEA, regs, the federal regs under 34 CFR Section 300.153 sub A, the law clearly states an organization,
right,
key,
right,
or individual may file a signed written complaint under these procedures.
Right.
So we're an organization, and we just argued against the motion to dismiss by saying, listen, it's clearly stated in the law,
right,
that an organization can file these type of complaints on behalf of the individuals at the facility, all individuals at the facility. And the state said, yes, indeed, we're right, which was interesting. We got in the pleadings, and it's not even state complaints aren't even judicial procedures. So
correct.
That was a whole interesting thing, too, because lack of standing, you know, not only is something that you bring up in a judicial proceeding, but also it was, you know, pretty plain in the law that we can do this. So it was really interesting.
Right. Yeah, so I raised this with you pretty much knowing the answer, but I wanted you to, you know, get it out there because I was surprised to see it in the investigation report, and I just wanted to focus on it for a minute to make it clear to everyone that, in fact, there is no issue of standing in the context of filing state complaints, and to your point, it's very clear that organizations can file, and also that you don't even have to be in the state. So,
yeah,
you know, I could have filed in here in my office in Virginia. I could have filed a complaint against the Iowa juvenile home, for that matter. So, I thought it was very intriguing that they tried to challenge your standing. So,
I thought I was missing something when I got there. The motion dismissed, I thought, wait, what?
Right.
What am I missing? Is this that? Yeah, anyway.
Yeah. And let's talk about another little tidbit that I discovered in the investigation report, and that is that the report stated that the complainant has the burden of proof, citing the 2005 Supreme Court decision in Schaefer v. Wiest. However, there's a policy letter, and we have it on our website,
mm-hmm,
that was issued to the Maine PNA, your organization there, and in 2014 by the U.S. Department of Education, clarifying that the Wiest decision does not apply to IDEA state complaint investigations. And in fact, when I went back and looked at the letter that the Maine PNA had submitted to the department asking for the clarification, they in fact even referenced the investigation report, the Iowa report, and its reference to burden of proof. So I just wanted you to also clarify for everyone that there is no burden of proof either in state complaints.
Correct. That was our belief as well. You know, we didn't go after the state on that one. I mean, we got the results that we wanted. But right. The state complaint process is not a judicial process. You know,
right.
Burden of proof there is that's more of a it's more of something that you use in a judicial process, not
right.
in a police
right.
investigate this process.
So, can you give us a quick overview of the IDEA allegation violations that you alleged in the complaint against the Iowa Juvenile Home, which again was the facility specifically for girls that you put forward in your complaint?
Okay, so this could go on for days. So, real brief,
right.
I would say, because there was several
yes.
failure. I mean, you can say they weren't quite following the IDEA at all.
Okay.
Failure to follow.
Right?
Yeah, exactly. Failure to follow requirements for IEPs. So that just included, you know, lack of individualization, boilerplate goals that weren't measurable, lack of supports and services provided for the individual, you know, so on and so forth. Failure to provide education in an LRE, you know, in the least restrictive environment. Basically, you know, when you have these young people in a facility like this, it's, well, everybody goes to the gen ed classroom or everybody goes to this specific classroom or whatever, and there's no real individual consideration as to what is the least restrictive environment for that individual, you know, and that individual's needs. Lack of appropriate transition services. A lot of boilerplate stuff, a lot of, you know, we'll graduate and go to this community college located in this town, and yet, you know, there's plans to do something else in a whole different part of the state, put in the same transition plan, which, you know, basically just not, they weren't common sense type plans. It was like someone was trying to just check the box, you know,
right.
and checking the box without checking the other box to see what they had checked, to see if it even flows.
Mm-hmm.
Lack of child find, you know, their policy for child find was incorrect. It didn't even mirror the law.
Right.
Failure to identify surrogate parents for youth whose have parents whose parents' rights have been terminated.
Mm-hmm.
We saw in several instances the Department of Human Services caseworker being named as the parent, and we know that when we look at the IDEA that the state cannot act as the parent for educational purposes at IEP meetings if that child is a ward of the state. It creates a conflict of interest.
Right.
Failure to provide the appropriate services during disciplinary action. That was a big one. There was a huge overuse of the seclusion rooms at this facility, and youth that were staying in there for long periods of time that were on IEPs that were not receiving any type of educational services. So no FAPE being provided to youth under the kind of the procedural safeguards section of the IDEA that deals with discipline. And then failure to provide appropriate behavioral interventions. You know, the functional behavior assessments and behavior intervention plans were, some of them, once again, lacked individualization. Some were old from several years ago and had interventions that had to do with locations and places that had nothing to do with this, you know, their current placement. So they couldn't even, you know, be using that plan to begin with. It was impossible. And then actual lack of implementation of those plans if they did have anything that was appropriate and then, you know, the teachers in the classroom were not implementing the behavior intervention plans.
Right.
As well as just, you know, types of behaviors that would say aggressive behavior, but not delineate what exactly that was so that it could be measured. So that was all the violations that we alleged, and all of those were founded.
Right. And I would just say that the investigation report by the Iowa Department of Education, which is I'll prepare everybody, 72 pages long, longest one I've ever seen, is certainly a kind of a lesson in itself. I mean, the level of detail that the author goes into with regard to each one of these items that you've ticked off, it, to me, was just astounding and just a almost like a tutorial, including the issue that he raised with regard to when you talk about the disciplinary removals, the fact that that the staff were not reporting these as disciplinary removals to the state as they are required to do under IDEA, so that they are then getting rolled up into the data that's reported out from your state to the feds. So, you know, it's another way of kind of keeping these kids invisible, right?
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah.
And just to say something about our state investigator that wrote that report, we have the luxury of having a pretty solid state investigator that writes all the reports, and he is he's got a legal aid background, so you know we got to get as many state complaints filed here with him while he's there.
Right, exactly. So to finish up on this case, were there any aspects of the investigation report or the corrective action that he ordered that disappointed your agency?
You know, no, there weren't. The process, the only thing where we felt a little bit disappointed, maybe not disappointed, maybe that's not the word, but were frustrated by or thought things could have gone different, is, you know, they awarded compensatory education to youth that had been there within the last year. And So that ended up being around 120 some youth that were evaluated to see if they needed compensatory education. Now that seemed like a very cumbersome process, and at the end of the day, we questioned whether or not almost all of those students needed advocates at the IEP table,
mm-hmm.
because, you know, the actual comp ed plans that came out that we saw at the end of the day seemed pretty weak, and we weren't sure, you know, at the end of the day, does a mass comp ed order work well if you don't have individual advocacy,
right?
You know, at the end of the day, I'm not sure. We're not sure on that one, and that was kind of our frustration.
Right, and here again, there's a lengthy discussion in the report about compensatory education and the different methodologies that can be used to determine how much is needed. So
mm-hmm.
that I found that very educational as well.
Yeah.
So so let's talk now a little bit about the second complaint, the one you filed in June of 2014 against the Clarinda Academy. Can you tell us a little bit about Clarinda?
Yeah, so that's not a state-run facility. It's a facility run by Sequel, which owns and operates several facilities across the United States. It's a residential treatment facility. Several states, including Iowa, send their court-ordered youth there. So they can be either in the delinquency system or the child welfare system and get sent there. Usually if they're in the child welfare system, it has to do with youth that struggle with behaviors and have gotten kind of bounced out at other group homes and foster care placements. There's around 250 beds there or so, and it's male and female.
Right. So is it a for-profit operation?
You know, I'm not sure as to the answer on that.
Okay.
So I can't answer that.
But
I can look it up, but yeah.
But the kids who are there are only, they only get there by a court order, right?
Correct.
A parent, they can't be unilaterally placed there by a parent.
Correct. This is
so
not a voluntary placement facility.
Right. Okay. So did your complaint against Clarinda or your work, your investigation of Clarinda, evolve out of the fact that the Iowa Juvenile Home was going to be closed?
Well, the relationship to the closing is that all the youth that were still at the Iowa Juvenile Home when it was, you know, preparing to close, were then, you know, they all had to have their own court hearings and judges had to order them elsewhere, right, to be placed elsewhere. And so a handful of girls went to Clarinda Academy, and we had followed up with all girls there, and when we followed up with some of those girls at Clarinda, we found that there were some educational issues that we needed to follow up on, which, you know, brought us into finding some very similar issues at Clarinda that we found at IJH.
Right, and in fact, in reading the complaint against Clarinda, I noticed that you had, it appeared, incorporated some of the language from the investigation report of the Iowa Juvenile Home, right? So, in fact, that decision in that report kind of assisted you in preparing the Clarinda complaint. Is that correct?
Correct. We use some language in there, definitely with the transition piece, because there's a great language in our state complaint as has to do with our state standards for transition planning for students with IEPs, and it's called Indicator 13 in our state. And essentially, the state investigator at the end of the day says, if you're not meeting these six criteria as part of this indicator, you're not doing special education at all.
Right.
And so that's basically what we said. You know, we just use that in our state complaint against Clarinda Academy because the same issues in transition planning were coming up.
So I also noticed that the Clarinda investigation report states that the respondents offered a proposed resolution, but your agency asked the State Department to move forward with its investigation anyway. So why did you take that position?
Number one is we didn't want to oversee any type of compensatory education, stuff like that, we didn't want to be the agency to try to oversee any of the remedies.
Right.
And that probably would have put us on the hook if we would have mediated and kind of looked at that. That would have put us on the hook for, you know, a lot more oversight, which we're a very small P&A. So there's no way we wanted to do that, nor could. And so we wanted to keep the DE as the oversight, you know, for that. We know we got a solid people in the DE that do that work right now. So we're confident in their oversight. So we wanted them to do that. And then the second reason is sometimes public shame is not too bad of a thing to try to make change, you know, and make people hop to it. And you know, what better way to do that? You know, if you file a complaint, you've already know that you got a problem and you're butting heads and you're not able to come to some type of an agreement. So you might as well just follow it through, in our mind, and let the DE oversee it and have a little public shame so that we get a little more accountability going on.
All right. Good. Okay. Now, this is kind of a technical issue I want you to help us understand. Both of the investigations found, quote, systemic areas of noncompliance, unquote, so just as your agency had alleged. Because of this, in ordering the corrective action, the State Department stated that the ordered corrective action must be simultaneously broader, in other words, must provide systemic remedies, and narrower, in other words, must allow for child-specific correction. Can you kind of put this in a little more user-friendly terms?
Yeah, I can parse that out. So the broader corrective actions, I'll just parse it out by saying kind of what happened or what we asked for in remedies and what were actual remedies. So the broader systemic corrective action is, you know, training for the personnel there, the additional supports. Maybe there was some turnover, employee turnover, and additional employees added to make certain that the IDEA was being followed. Criteria for hiring people, you know, can change in terms of highly qualified personnel. policy changes made to the actual facilities, both facilities. There were policy changes that were, well, would have been done at IJH had it have been remained open.
Right.
And then monitoring of that by the area education agencies. More emphasis put on the enforcement capabilities of our area education agencies so that the facilities understood that they don't dominate. You know, the administration of the facilities don't dominate. The AEA tells you what you can and cannot do. So those are kind of the broader corrective actions that can take place systemically. But at the same time, we know that in the system, there's individuals being affected, and the whole point of our Individuals with Disabilities Education Act is the individual, you know, paying attention to what the individual needs. And so that would be, you know, compensatory education that makes sense for that individual student. That's not going to, can't order compensatory education as a package deal, one size fits all for all students. That's got to be figured for each student and their actual needs and actual educational deficits that were caused by the violations of the IDEA. And then that also might include IEP changes, you know, changes to someone's IEP that's deficient, and that's going to be the IEP team. That's not going to be, you know, the state being able to order a broad, sweeping, general statement, because that in and of itself would violate the IDEA.
Right.
Does that,
so you would have they basically have to see both happening.
Exactly. You know, you want remedies for the individual because they've been harmed. You know, if there is, you know, if they weren't receiving FAPE, then
right.
You know what? How do you fill the gap that
right.
was caused by those violations, the educational gap?
Right.
And then you also need to make sure that you're not repeating these issues. So you want to make sure that you get people in there that know how to do the right thing and the proper oversight if needed.
Right. Okay, so does your agency have any further plans to investigate other juvenile facilities? I think you already mentioned that earlier on, right? You're looking at the boys' facility now?
Correct. We've been looking at the boys' state training school since last. We started looking at their education issues last spring and actually worked with the Iowa Department of Education and our executive branch, because once again, Department of Human Services runs that facility, and have been able to work without a state complaint right now,
uh-huh.
although we may have to file one here soon in order to get issues resolved.
Right. And that's another avenue that can be taken sometimes, right? And that
right.
can be a team put to a committee put together and a report written and
correct, and that's exactly what we do.
Corrective actions come from that report. So we kind of like to for everybody to be able to use all the avenues available to us as advocates to make things better for kids with disabilities. So what can other PNAs, your sister agencies across the states, as well as disability advocates, learn from your two complaints?
Well, I think if you have some folks that work in your Department of Education in your state that are investigators and you know that they're getting, you know, complaint officers that do a great job, then I think the state complaint process can work for systemic change. And we've seen that happen here. Like I said, I'm not sure how much it works for mass ordering of Comp Ed. I think the jury's still out on that. I don't know how. You'd almost have to do some type of longitudinal study to see how that, you know, how it all works out in the end. But otherwise, changing the actual system and the way things are happening for the youth in the future, I definitely think the state complaint process can work for that. If you have people in your DE that are solid and do that type of work, I've heard from other PNAs that some of their states don't necessarily have that privilege right now, and so I guess that process doesn't really work for them.
Right. But nonetheless, with regard to the dispute resolution options under IDEA, the state complaint process is the only one of them that can be used to address systemic issues, and as we talked about before, is also available to other parties other than parents. And so,
correct.
It,
you know, you don't have to have a plaintiff per se, and
correct.
That's what's great. You don't, because you know that's hard sometimes, especially when you're looking at facilities like we looked at.
Right.
You know, to get a guardian or a parent to want to bring this action, it's nice to be able to say, you know what, we got this information as the PNA through our access authority. We can file as the PNA.
Right.
And on behalf of all the individuals here, and we'll just use these folks, you know, the records as exemplars, non-named persons, and
right.
and you can get it done. That kind of, you don't have to try to certify a class, find plaintiffs, try to deal with all that.
Correct. Great. So, well, thank you so much for sharing both the complaints and the decisions with us. Well, Iowa is, we have noted on our website that you know, there's only a handful of states that, in fact, make public their complaint investigation reports, and Iowa is not one of them. So we're happy to be able to share the investigation reports with our people because you were so generous as to give them to us. And, of course, it's always very helpful to have the initial complaint so that people can see how you structured that as well. So we appreciate you doing that, and we appreciate you sharing your experiences and your wisdom with us today. And we wish you continued good luck in your work on behalf of these kids who I think that we all agree are very disenfranchised.
Yes. Thank you for having me, and thank you for the work you do in keeping everyone up to speed as to what's happening in the world of state complaints. And, you know, information is power, and when we're able to share that information, I think we can do better work for